Curating Boise is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. Welcome to Curating Boise, the podcast that celebrates the hustlers and the shakers, the ones that took the short route of being their own creative boss right away, or the ones that left their corporate jobs, like me, your host, Catherine Wojcik. Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome to Curating Boise. Gosh, the last time I was doing a podcast with Amy Pence Brown, I had mentioned where I'd taken a couple of weeks off to kind of like just regroup and reset, you know, everything for the podcast, my businesses, and just life in general. And I think I've done that again in between Amy Pence Brown and my next guest, Peter Lavera.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. So cheers with our...
Cheers.
Thanks
for the mate.
We already cracked and we're drinking yerba mate. Mm-hmm. I felt like we needed a little energy kick.
I'm into
5
it.
O'clock.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, you need that like just to get over there.
Enlightenment,
you
it's
know?
A good flavor.
I'm going to tell you, I just started drinking these.
The mates?
Yes.
Nice.
I've seen them... I kind of got leery because I was like, is it kind of like an energy drink, which I've never had before? Mm. So I got kind of shy from it. But then a friend turned me on to it at the co-op. I was shopping and was stacking these and I asked him about it.
They're
so
legit.
Now I'm like onto them. They're in my fridge.
Yeah, I had some roommates from Brazil and they would do the whole like bombilla straw.
Oh, really?
Yep, just like the mate in the bottom of the vessel, hot water.
Oh,
and
dang.
They would drink that all day.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
yeah, so good.
Before we get going on all good things about Peter, to talk about that a little bit, my husband was in, when we were dating, he went to Peru and hitchhiked all over the place.
Sweet.
He got into cocoa leaves
and
putting those in there for his
nice.
Extra little zeal and zest.
what do they call it? Elevation acclimating.
Yes.
Yeah. As well as mantis inflammatory. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Whatever. He enjoyed it.
Nice. That's
he
awesome.
He liked it. Yeah. He hitchhiked all over Peru, all over South America. Went
That's
over
really
there
good.
To ski, actually.
I have some big dreams of getting out there and riding my bike through Peru.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a big
You're
life,
Peruvian.
Life goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was
so
born there.
Yeah.
Yep. Only That's lived there until I was about 4 years old, but went back when we were 12, when I was 12. And, That trip just changed my life.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, my husband had a great time over there. He was gone for a good amount of time.
Yeah.
He went with a buddy from Lake Tahoe that he met, and they decided to go ski
nice.
Over there. So,
yeah, it doesn't sound like a bad time.
No, no, he did. He had a really great time. Didn't really recognize him when he got back, but, yeah, it was good for him.
Yeah. One of the guys I work with just got back from Peru. He did a big bike tour.
Oh, yeah.
High elevation, like Incan territory. Looked
for
amazing.
Sure. Yeah. Ed, that's my husband. He hiked the Inca Trail with his friend, but in a pair of Converse.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's what he took. That's the only pair of shoes he had.
Does he skate? Did he bring his board, too?
He didn't skate. It's only a skier.
Missed opportunity.
Yep, I know, right? Yep.
I don't think there's any parks on the Inca Trail, though.
No. But Inca Trail and Converse sounds really insane. But, all right, anyway.
I'll give it to him.
Yeah. So, Peter, I met you very briefly.
Yeah.
Gosh, I want to say... It was even maybe 2 years ago?
Probably.
You were snapping, or maybe like right when Eric was leaving my shop and went into his new space.
Oh, yeah, his new space on Broadway.
His new space on Broadway.
Yep.
You were over there paying him a visit and snapping off some photos. And when Eric posted some of the photos, they were amazing.
Oh, thanks.
You have a keen eye.
Thank you.
You really do.
I just love doing it. Yeah.
I was looking. Well, you can tell. Because I was looking through your Instagram like a creeper and, you know, just trying to get a feel for, you know, over the last couple weeks, you know, like what to talk to you about. Because I know that you're kind of like a little bit of a jack of all trades, you know, right? Totally. You build bikes. So you're into cycling and all that kind of stuff. You board. You skateboard. You are a photographer. You're a mixologist. You work at Kin. You made time for me, so now you're a podcast.
First timer.
I like that.
First timer with Mate. So if
all right, see, it feels good, right? Feels really good.
Yeah, I kind of, I don't know. I kind of got into so many things, and now I just, it's like what keeps me going, just like creating, whatever that looks like.
No, I think it. I think it looks really good, for what you're doing. I mean, I was even reading, your words that you use in your Instagram on a lot of your posts are very vivid as well. The one post in particular I'm thinking about is when you built a bike for one of your friends, Ashley. And I read through that thing and you give a lot of kudos to people that you got parts from and gave you input, advice or whatever, and you built this really beautiful bike for her. So that's really nice.
Yeah, it's such a involved process, and I get to meet really great people in town and just kind of familiarize myself with these personalities and, you know, other passionate people that are stoked to see me buying parts and like building that rapport. And then I get to create this bike for somebody.
Oh my gosh.
And kind of make it fit their vibe, you know, because Ashley has a vibe. So I really wanted it to fit.
Right. And I could sense that. Like, totally. I felt like I need to know who Ashley is. Does Ashley need to be on my podcast? Yeah, I mean, I was like asking myself that.
Yeah,
because
I was joking with her. I was like,
you made her sound so cool.
Yeah, she's great. And that's through my really, really good buddy, Lucas.
Lucas.
Who's part of Push and Pour.
Yes.
He trusted me and was like, oh, I just really want Ashley to have a dope ride.
That's his girl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, totally. Makes sense now.
Yep.
One cool person, another cool
person. Exactly.
Yeah, because Lucas was a lot of fun to have on this podcast.
Oh,
a lot
nice.
Of energy.
Oh, yeah.
We had beer. He's my
boy.
This.
he's my boy for sure.
Oh, no. Such a sweet guy and, gosh, really good entrepreneurial, you know, vision.
Yeah, he's go, go, go. He's definitely very inspiring since day one, even back to, like, the Crux days.
Oh, yeah. We talked about the Crux, too.
That was a moment for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
So good. So how long have you been? Have you been in Boise the whole time? Or?
So I pretty much, we came here from Phoenix, Arizona when I was about 14, 15, transitioning into sophomore year.
Yeah.
I was actually homeschooled in Phoenix from fourth grade through sophomore year.
Okay.
And then I went to CUNA.
Okay.
My mom's side of the family lived in CUNA at the time.
All right.
So I'm in CUNA High School, and it was like cultural shock from like Maricopa County. Phoenix, Arizona, to CUNA, Idaho.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But I was here for it. Like, I just skate and like float Indian Creek, so it was awesome.
Nice.
And then after that, I kind of transitioned into the Boise scene by way of the music, like at the venue.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go to the venue a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that when I talk to people like Lucas or, you know, Bridget and Brandon and, you know, Lindsay and stuff, I think that's one of the main things that I hear very intergrained amongst the up and comings, you guys who I believe are real visionaries, movers, shakers, you guys are really doing some cool stuff here. You all are drawn to, you know, the arts, the music, the, you know, the scene. So it's really nice.
And skateboarding was my introduction into the arts. I mean, I remember being a homeschool kid downtown Phoenix, and I had access to the Phoenix Public Library.
Okay.
And they had like a media section. And it was full of, like, VHS, obviously. But then there was this, like, extreme sports area that was really funny.
Right.
And they just had a bunch of, like, the early Thrasher VHS.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just, like, devour those films. And the music was a big part of it, but then the art, too. I mean, I would just peel through, like, Transworld skateboarding magazines and look at all these designs on, like, the skateboard decks or with the shoes and, like, then the skaters and the photography. That was, like, it's all linked back to skateboarding, I think. That's what really kind of sparked my artistic angle and, like, my lens is all because of skateboarding.
Wow. And I feel like, so Bridget skateboards.
Yeah.
And with Lucas, too, and I keep saying Lucas's name, but, I mean, because I was really interested in all of his skateboarding stuff that he was talking to me about.
Incredible skater,
But with Bridget, you know, boarding, too, I think she was also expressing to me, you know, when you're skateboarding and you're creative with the moves, you get creative with the group of people you're with. Everyone has these ideas.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all like, yeah, let's, you know, have you been there? Have you done that?
Yep.
Let's check it out. Let's go as a group. Let's, yep. you know, whatever. And it becomes this just like contagious thing.
Yeah. It's a force. And oh, I remember yeah. I was so like just obsessed from, I was probably 12 years old when I really started to like get into it. And I remember like in my garage in Phoenix, like just practicing a kickflip.
Oh, wow.
For like months and months.
Over and over and over.
And then I would take the bus to Desert West Skate Park, which is like in Maricopa County, one of the oldest skate parks there. And that's when I started making friends. And like, they were like, oh, there's an amateur competition this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Come check it out.
Yeah.
And I would roll up. And then all of a sudden, it was like this community of people where it didn't matter what you look like, how
right.
you skated, you were instantly, you were family.
That's great.
And it was just fun, you know, because it's
That's
all
so
about
good.
Like, the style and self-expression and like individuality, but also part of this community too.
It right. was really dope. Did you ever feel like you were competing with any of these people? Like, you know, like when you're at the parks, I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure there's,
sure.
you want to show off
yeah,
and
yeah.
stuff, but you better make sure you know what you're doing.
Yep. There's a little bit of that at certain points, but it's dope because once you find like your crew and the people
mm-hmm.
you really roll with,
yeah.
it becomes so comfortable and then
so
you're
supportive.
Just expressing yourself.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool.
And you get so psyched when other people are like landing something or
yeah.
they're learning something, even real simple.
Yeah.
You just get psyched on that because you know what it
you're
feels
happy
like.
For them.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know what it feels like to learn something real small.
Right.
And once you master it, like that feeling of progression, it
mm-hmm.
becomes addicting.
You know, I just recently saw something. I can't remember if I saw it on the news, but they were talking about skateboarding going into the Olympics, and there was
oh,
a
yeah.
clip of
right.
Rhodes, and there was a kid who was, you know, had his hair pulled back in a little ponytail thingy, and
yeah.
he was on his board, and he kept trying to do this one thing, jumping off the side and, I don't know, doing some kind of flip
some
with
flip
the board.
Trick or something, yeah.
And he did it over and over and over, and they must have shown him doing it, like,
yeah.
while they were interviewing.
Yep.
13, 14 times.
Oh, yeah.
But then when he finally hit it, it was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's just like, ah!
yeah.
And he looked all happy, but he just kept doing it over and yeah. over and over.
Yeah, that level of commitment is something that, you know, I wasn't really taught per se.
Wow.
And then once you have, like, you can see it in your mind, you're like, oh, I want to do this.
Right.
I can do this. And then halfway through the trick, like, after you've fallen like 10 times, you're like, actually, maybe if I move my front foot a little bit this
little
way,
bit more.
Like, yeah. And like, I feel like that's just raw creation.
Yeah.
In the
oh,
moment.
Yeah.
You're so present in your body. Even if
sure.
you are slamming, like you're still just in your body and
yeah.
present, feeling pain.
Yeah.
And then if you land it, like that's the ultimate reward.
Oh,
it's like,
gosh.
Yeah, you can't replace that.
Yeah, no, the kid looked pretty happy.
Yeah.
I mean, the crew, all, everyone was like, yeah, that's so great.
But I was just kicking it with Lucas last weekend.
Uh-huh.
And we had some friends visiting from the Bay Area.
Okay.
And then this other homie named Yas from France, who I just met.
Oh, wow.
And they were all talking and tripping out about the fact that, like, it was because of skateboarding that they know each other and that they've been able to travel the world.
Yeah.
And, like, experiencing so much. It all comes back to skateboarding.
Yeah, that's so good.
I yeah.
He did express a lot about, like, these really close friendships that
yeah.
he's made, you know,
yeah.
through skating.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
That's great.
That's awesome.
So, you're Peruvian American.
Yep.
Is what you have on your thing.
100%, yeah.
So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But you're also a mixologist.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And I want to find out, do you ingrain any of your Peruvian background?
Yes.
In your...
1,000%. It's actually like a huge driving force to what I've been working towards for the past few years. Because I've been a chef and a bartender for quite some time. But I think what's really been a huge transition for me recently is in kind of implementing my background and my roots into what I'm offering and sharing with people. Right?
Okay.
Because I've
yeah.
always known that like cooking food and making drinks and having that moment with people is huge to me. And it inspires me on so many levels.
Oh yeah.
But now that I'm able to implement my roots and kind of like this indigenous awareness into
yes.
the recipes I'm using and like the food that I'm implementing,
mm-hmm.
It's been really, really awesome.
Are you a mixologist for Kin, or are you also chefing at Kin? What do you do?
So I started to work with the kitchen in terms of byproduct because they're a huge driving force, and one of their ethos, one of the points of ethos that they work towards is sustainability.
Oh, they're great.
Yes.
They're so good.
Obviously, it's like local food awareness and all about Boise farming.
Yeah.
But it's also like, how do we use this product that, you know, oh, we just like juice these carrots. Maybe we can use this like carrot pulp and put them in muffins or something.
Yeah.
And like.
Like, don't waste anything.
Yeah. Let's just the way that they operate is really rad.
Right.
They're trying to use the whole, whether it's the whole animal or the plant, whatever it is. It's like, how can we use this at any given point in our menu?
Yeah. I ordered, and maybe they were your cocktails that during COVID,
the to-go?
Yeah. Nice. Fabulous. Yeah. Brilliant thing that they did.
Did it have the wax top too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really, really nice.
Yeah. Shout out.
It was an experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh no. They did such a good job. That whole process was legit.
Yeah. It's been really humbling to work around Chris Camorti, the executive chef there, and then Remy McManus, who also is part owner and part curator of just how Kin expresses himself.
Oh, wow.
They are so inspiring, the way they operate. And it's so cool because I can come to them and say, oh, hey, there's this drink that I remember drinking in Peru called chicha morada.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a purple corn stewed pineapple drink. And they're like, that sounds dope. How can we do it a little bit more local? Maybe we can get some like local Flint corn. Maybe instead of pineapple, obviously pineapple doesn't go there. Maybe we can use pineapple chamomile.
Yeah.
And like spike it with some citric acid.
There you go.
Make it taste authentic.
Yeah.
And so in that way, it's like a really big creative outlet for me.
And a challenge.
Yeah. And
well, no wonder then. So like last week when we were trying to, you know, connect and stuff. And I mean, now I'm getting that whole process and I get that. I mean,
especially for this tasting menu.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. That's wonderful. So Eric also mentioned that you've done competitions.
Yeah, totally.
Tell me about that a little bit.
Well, I did one, which I won, and so then I was in part two, the grand finale.
Yeah, okay.
That was cool. It was Wyoming Whiskey.
Okay.
Came to Water Bear Bar.
Oh, okay.
And the whole idea was make a cocktail with a base of Wyoming whiskey.
Okay.
And then there were judges, and it was super fun. Yeah, I'd never done anything like that.
Would you do it again?
Oh, yeah. I just said yes because I was like, this could be cool. Like, I have an idea. Yeah. I was like, wait a second. I think I can do something cool.
Yeah, I know. My kids are always asking me, Mom, do you think you could ever do like Chopped or, you know, some of those things?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I watch those shows. I'm like, they're intense.
Yeah, for
sure. But I would definitely try to challenge myself that way.
Yeah.
To do something like that. Why not? Fully. I mean, the worst that could happen is you get chopped.
Right.
Big deal.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I remember being there at Water Bear and there was like a ton of people and like music was going. And I was like, oh, good. I'm not first off. Like, I get to stay here.
Yeah.
And then I realized I didn't have like any measuring tools. I didn't have any.
You just like showed up?
I just literally showed up with like my my ingredients. And that was it.
Oh, wow.
I forgot everything else. And then John Strubar, who I now work with at Kin, he was there and he goes, oh, I got you. Like, you can use all my stuff.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it was really dope.
That's nice.
I went through it and I had selected, they let you like pick your own music.
Okay.
So I selected like some real chill, like lo-fi hip hop.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I just kind of cruised through it and made a drink. It was fun.
That's great. Yeah. What was the name of the drink?
Like kind of like a chicha punch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yep. I had made my purple corn reduction with the pineapple chamomile and citric acid and everything. And then I just spiked it.
Dang. Yeah. Does Water Bear have that on their menu?
No.
Ah.
No.
That's yours. You own it.
Yeah, for sure.
You own it.
I mean,
it.
They could. I'm down to collab with
Heck
them.
Heck yeah.
But yeah, they need to start stewing some corn if they want to make that.
Yeah. Do you bartend anywhere else in town? Do you have a side hustles?
So I bartended in many places and eventually ended up at Kin just because it really aligned with what I'm working towards currently. The ethos really line up. And it's all about like family there and community. So that's my only place that I'm creating at currently.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do like the bikes and photos on the side.
Right. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me too, like just with my business with Savory and Sweet, you know, I was doing plated service and, you know, buffet and all that kind of stuff, but I felt like I was too far and back. I wasn't out front with people, meeting people. And, you know, I had people doing that for me.
Sure.
I was just in the back plating up stuff and cooking and, you know, creating and doing my thing. And that's why I got into doing like grazing tables and stuff more so that I could see the people and, you know, change things up on there and, you know, find cheeses from all over the world and different salumi from all over the place and kind
That's of dope.
Bring it all in. Yeah. I don't know, being Mexican myself, mm-hmm. you know, large groups of family all the time, everybody yeah. bringing something to the table,
totally.
Roasting pigs, grilling yep. corn, everyone, you know, That's making salsa. And yep. I think that for me is really important. And I like people. I'm very drawn to people that I can feel
have
that same sense of that.
Oh, it's huge.
Which yeah. I definitely can feel from, yep. you know, what I know about you.
Even in Phoenix, I remember I was probably 8 to 10 years old. One of our neighbors was from Michoacan,
mm-hmm.
and the wife, I think her name was Socorro, she would make these huge grazing tables and like tamales
yeah.
and like all kinds of stuff. And then they would have like a band and they would like bring in lighting. I remember my mom was like, what is going on over there?
Right.
I was like, I'm going.
They're
like,
just
I'm
having checking a get together. Yeah.
And they were just having a get together and yeah. like everybody was welcome. You could just roll up.
Yep.
And it was all about like obviously the food, but then it was like food, music. And conversation.
Absolutely. And
like getting to know the people that live in your neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
If it was in like downtown Maricopa County.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My families were very much like that. I mean, yep. I would say, there was a good percent where some of ours did lead to some heavy talk and arguments
sure.
and whatnot. But
yeah.
that's how we all grow. That's how you learn stuff yeah. about people. Maybe yin what yang, buttons not to push next time.
Right.
Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, like, let's talk about the photos because, like I said on your Instagram, I was, even just the photos of, with Ashley and her bike.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it told a story. It got the way you were describing, like, even the petals,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think you said cotton candy or something petals.
The mismatch color.
Yeah. Things like that. And then I was looking at, like, flowers, pictures of flowers mm-hmm. that you took that caught the sun, like, right in back. It felt like I could touch that sun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your tree fort pictures of the bands and stuff like that. So have you done any photo submissions to any zines or anything like that?
I haven't really done any submissions to zines. I did, however, do some, like, with Brandon.
Okay.
Rawhide.
Oh, yeah, Rawhide. Yep. I saw
so
some of that.
So we've been really good friends over the years.
Yeah.
He works with my best friend, Ryan.
Okay.
Stalkup. He's, like, a big fabricator there.
Yep.
It's pretty much Ryan and Brandon.
See that bigger guy?
Yep.
Works out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See him in the
awesome.
Pictures? Yeah.
Yep. So Ryan kind of linked me in with Brandon, and I met him, started taking photos, and then I would take photos of all his bikes.
All right.
And then I would get, like, invitations to go into, like, a magazine or, like, some type of, chopper magazine.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of, like, printed media in that sense, but mostly motorcycle-based.
Right.
And then in terms of the photos, I think the real big thing for me was how I got into this.
Oh,
which was at CUNA High School. They had a film developing class. Thankfully, and I just, like, lost myself. And I took it, like, 2 years. I think it was sophomore and junior. And then, they also had an ornithology class, which was dope. And so, we did, like, this four-day Oregon bus trip.
At CUNA High School, who would have thought?
Yeah, exactly. To the Oregon coast. Okay. And I was just getting into photography. And, like, I just fell in love with being in wild spaces, checking out dope birds.
Yeah.
And taking, like, kind of film photos, analog. And so now I shoot with, I have a digital camera, but I have this lens that I've been working on forever. And it's from the 60s, late 60s, Minolta 1.2.
Okay.
So the aperture, when I'm shooting wide open, it can take like the sun, like you brought up.
Right.
And it kind of melts it almost.
Yeah.
And it, I don't know, it's interesting the way that it sees light and color.
Okay.
And I'm so drawn to that kind of abstract, melty look.
It's really neat. I feel I'm gonna go to my phone right now. I'm gonna pull it up because it is such a crazy. I was just like, holy cowboy.
I've done a few series of like the melty sunsets, and I've been lucky to make some good connections in town. I had a show at Coiled, which was really dope. I had a show.
Oh, that's nice.
I had some stuff hanging at Meriwether. Modern Art. I actually was at the, I think, second to last Modern Art show in 2014.
Wow.
13 or 14, yeah.
Okay, so like that one.
Yeah, the melty.
Like that is
looks like an egg yolk kind of.
It really does. It does look like an egg yolk.
Yeah, I'm into that.
But like that is absolutely stunning. You can totally see the sky. Yeah. You can see the sun. You can see the flowers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, is it getting, did you do this to make it look like that, or is it actually getting darker?
So that was in the evening. 20 minutes later. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was
unbelievable.
My buddy's property.
So I always like seeing on photographers, there are pictures where they list like the cameras and stuff that they use and all that. Cause I mean, I like to take pictures, but I find it really interesting. My niece, Alex Kechadorian, she has a zine called Amadeus it's out of LA.
Sweet.
And she was used to, I don't know if she still does, cause she's the editor of it now too. And I think she has people that do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. She may have gotten away from it a little bit, but she would take, I feel like you two, when I saw your pictures of like people and stuff, I see Alex too, because she has such a keen eye of catching, you know, the moment. And she puts on there too all the time, like took it with a blah, 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 blah lens, this and that. And I think the it's very kit. Informative. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Super informative.
Yep.
So the lens that you're putting together, is it something that you're creating?
So
Or are you just trying to bring this 60s lens back to life?
So I actually found this lens when I lived on Maui for 5 years.
Okay.
And I was at this thrift store in Haiku, and I found this big Minolta 35 millimeter film camera.
Okay.
And what caught my eye was the lens, because it had this huge like front element.
Okay.
I was like, this is crazy. Like, what's going on here? And it was like $20.
Yeah.
And I realized that this lens, because it had such a low aperture number, it had a giant chunk of fluorite in it.
Oh, okay.
And so I knew that it had the ability to like capture some really stunning imagery. Yeah. So I did some research and found this guy at the time who was kind of engineering Canon bayonets for the back of it.
Okay.
Which a bayonet is like the rear metal piece that kind of bolts onto the back of the lens.
Okay.
That allows you to attach it to the camera.
Okay, gotcha.
And so I hit him up. And he said, oh, yeah, here's this forum step-by-step guide to how to put this little back on there. And so I downloaded that PDF and pretty much took the back off of it, put a Canon back onto it, and then I could use it on my Canon digital camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's all manual. And I just fell in love with using that lens. And I think it harkens back to, like, the people who inspired me when I was growing up learning about photography. Probably the biggest influence ever was Robert Frank.
Robert Frank.
Who is a 50s photographer. He came to New York from Switzerland.
Okay.
And then he's kind of considered like the godfather of street photography.
Oh, all right. And I'm going to look him up.
Yeah. Robert Frank. He
Robert
had a
Frank.
Book called
With a K or a C?
C.
Okay.
Actually, no, K. And I think his big book was called The Americans.
Okay.
Because at the time in the 50s, he was so tripped out by kind of the American culture at the time.
Right.
And how, honestly, in New York and in his travels, he was mostly tripped out by the consumerism and like the faith aspect of Americans.
Okay.
And so his documentary photography was very interesting. And,
and
at the time when it came out, it wasn't really received well.
Hmm.
And then 20, 30 years later, it's considered like one of the greatest photography books of all time.
So consumerism, like people buying things, walking around with bags and like just stuff.
He would go to like these tiny truck stops, you know, in Midwest and kind of take these interesting photos of like just lined up products, and just his composition and his awareness of everyday life.
Yeah.
Really caused people to think.
Yeah.
And look at the world differently. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
Robert Frank was a huge influence.
I think that's, you know, we're never, we get kind of like bitter when we're presented with something that maybe isn't all that great. Like consumerism in general, like if you're obsessed with that, not a good thing, probably.
Right.
You know, you can scale that back a little bit. There's other more important things in our world going on.
Yeah, totally.
And so his stuff probably brought some of that to light.
It did.
And even back then, you know?
Yeah,
it
exposed a lot of like the caste system too, and kind of like classism and like he has some really fascinating work.
Wow.
And that was one of my first kind of big photography influences.
Wow.
So I always kind of just was interested most in like documentary work.
Yeah.
And kind of like the way he shot was like from the hip, kind of tilted upwards.
Okay.
It really put you in the moment of wherever he was.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like, I always thought that was like the benchmark of photography.
That's good. I think, you know, with a lot of stuff, it's especially, I think, the older, you know, people who started, who paved the way for many things that mm-hmm. a lot of people are doing now. It's great to look back on that and build on that, or look, you know, to that to be your influence, and not so much like now.
Right.
You know, now influence, because everything's very digitalized.
Totally.
And stuff. So yep. that's someone who did not have any of that
exactly.
going on and came out with some great product.
And even still, the photographers that I follow that I really pay close attention to have that same approach and awareness in what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's very, like, not anti-digital, but, like, Arnold Daniel is mm-hmm. probably my favorite current living photographer.
Okay.
He's in New York. I mean, and he'll shoot for Vogue and pick up all kinds of crazy jobs. But at the end of the day, he's literally just walking for miles, for hours, and shooting from the hip, a lot of film photos. And what he captures is just
crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. So I know that you are a photographer for Tree Fort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's coming this next month.
Yeah, we have our
first. Are you excited?
Yeah, so
my
excited.
Gosh.
It feels like it's been
forever.
Forever. Yeah.
Forever.
That's been a real kind of juicy sector of the people I've met
yes.
here. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Tree Fort's huge here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big, just a massive festival that goes on.
Yeah. And,
you know?
And it's a photographer's absolute dream.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, do you have any bands that say, come shoot us?
So let's see. At this point, there's a lot of local bands who are like, oh, I've seen stuff really dope, or I'll like see them at Neuralux,
right?
I'll run into them and they're like, oh, we need some band photos. So that's been really dope.
Okay, that's nice.
Exactly.
That's flattering.
Yeah, it is. But Lizzo actually
what?
Yeah, Lizzo hit
oh
me
my
up.
God.
So
all
I
right,
was at
do you hear that,
stage.
Girls? Oh, my daughters, like my daughters that they rarely listen to my podcast,
yeah.
but every now and then I have some cool people on here. So listen to this, Lizzo.
Lizzo, shout out.
Yeah.
She hit me up right after her set at
what?
The main stage. Because I was kind of hanging out, eating some food. There's like the VIP tent on the backside of there. And that's kind of like refuel station.
Right.
So I was refueling. And then Lizzo had mentioned that she wanted to get a shot with all her hype girls.
Okay.
And then all of the women of Tree Fort who were there. Because obviously there were so many dope queens hanging out. And they're like, we need a dope queen shot.
Right.
I was like, this is it
right
here.
My
like,
gosh.
Let's go. I just want to like be the messenger for
this.
So I ended up taking that photo just right backstage, and it was all of Lizzo, her hype queens, and all the ladies of Tree Fort.
Wow.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
It was dope.
That's
and
really
then
cool.
Brett Perry jumped in there, too, because he's a queen, too.
Yeah. Well, okay, so that, too,
that
made me, that's what I'm saying, your stuff, I don't know, I've said this now five times, made me just go deep. And I even went to him and I was like, wow, look at this guy.
Brett?
Yeah.
He's great.
I mean, I was mesmerized,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate. I think that because, I mean, it's this long story of like mostly skateboarding
mm-hmm.
and then landing in Boise, meeting the cats at Prestige.
Yeah. Prestige. Do you skateboard for Prestige?
So I've always just been really, really good friends and part of the
with
community.
The guy. Yeah.
Yep. At the time I came to Boise, I was kind of really seriously getting into like photography and other things. So I never really tried to per se skate for them,
mm-hmm.
but really, really good friends. And through that community ended up meeting the Tree Fort community.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because they're all ingrained in that too. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're all.
Do you have a band at Tree Fort that's coming? Not even just has to be one. Give me three bands that you've already scouted, you know, on the lineup that you want to get there and get photos of them.
I mean, Chromatics.
Yeah.
Dope.
That's going to be a good one.
Yeah. It. I think their label is called Italians Do It Better or something like
that.
Oh, wow. Which I think is
that sounds
amazing
good, right?
Label. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chromatics are dope. I'm a big, like, kind of shoegaze person. So I'm really psyched for Chromatics. I'm also very psyched for Christian Scott Atunde Ajua.
Oh.
Which is, in my lifetime, probably the most eclectic, powerful, free jazz artist that I can remember.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's doing some very dope stuff.
What do you know where he's going to be at?
I don't.
Okay.
I haven't checked the schedule yet. I think.
Yeah, I know the schedule's out.
Yeah, I should check for sure.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he has a couple sets.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But he's like third, fourth generation, like, what is it? Not Creole. I need to look back and see exactly what tribe he's a part of. But he's part of this lineage in St. Louis.
Okay.
And he kind of started stretch music, which is this idea that like jazz harkens back to ancient, you know, music.
Sure. So it stretches across.
Yeah. And maybe, exactly. Yeah. And freeform too, sure. where it's like it borrows all of, like even like trap music, rap music, all this stuff kind of borrows aspects out of like freeform music. So I'm really stoked on his set.
Wow.
And he plays with a lot of talented musicians. So that there could be like anywhere from 6 to 10 musicians going for that set.
Geez.
It's going to be dope.
So there are so many bands, so many venues all around town. Do you spend every day at Treefort?
Yes.
Wow.
On the photo team.
All day long?
All day.
Damn. Yep.
Totally.
Must be exhausting.
It's so good, though, because it's like everywhere you go, you feel like you're about to break, and then you'll have a conversation at El Cora with like somebody who just like picks you up.
Yeah.
And you're like, yes, like I get to do this. This is incredible. And you're riveted again, and you're back in it.
Does the age group at Treefort, is it percent more one age group?
In my experience,
I can't imagine myself walking around Treefort.
No, I mean, absolutely. It's all over the place. And the saying is like Treefort is for everyone.
Sure.
And over the years, that's kind of even been more of like, we want to get that out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so dope because I remember one year they had like a Choch Fest at Food Fort.
Oh.
And it was all like Basque centered, like dancing.
Oh, that sounds really nice.
Yeah. And like the traditional like Choch, like the cider, everybody running up. And there were a lot of kind of like an older crowd there. And they were kind of walking around telling people how to pronounce certain words.
Oh, and,
like,
and that's good education too of the youngers.
Totally. And it's such a dope communal aspect.
Wow.
And so yeah, everybody's welcome at Treefort.
Yeah.
All ages. All everything. Yeah.
I might have to grab my husband and see if he'll go down there with me.
Heck yeah.
Man, that'd be fun.
Oh yeah.
Gosh.
It's so fun.
I've dropped my, you know, one daughter, four or five years ago, she got, she did a lot of interviews with a lot of the bands.
Oh, nice.
For Amadeus, my niece's zine, and some other stuff that she was writing for. And then a twin daughter, she's 24 now. She also got credentials one time and she did a bunch of band interviews and did, you know, articles on them too.
Nice.
Stuff. So
that's so dope.
They loved it.
Oh yeah.
But I think if I had told them, hey, I'm going to go down Treefort, they would have been like, mom, no.
Well, speaking of, that's funny. El Cora, I mean, it's cool because the Shriners are so involved.
They are.
And they're, I mean, their
maybe
age
that's my
range.
Place. Yeah.
Is, yeah. And like down at the, what is that bar called?
Downstairs.
The Oasis.
Yes, the Oasis.
The Oasis. Also, their merch table is dope. I will say that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a Shriner shirt for sure.
Oh, man. All right, I'm going to check that place out.
Yeah, that's a really good spot to hang out because it's all ages and like everybody gets to roll up and have a good time.
Yeah, that's good. That's fun. So where, with all the things that you do, what do you label yourself as one thing that you, or is there one thing that you're most, it sounds like you're very, very passionate about photography.
Yeah, I'm very curious about how I can stay invested in the creative process.
Okay.
And so like during COVID, obviously I didn't want to take any photos. My camera was breaking.
Okay.
My lens broke. I was kind of like just sitting on the table for months and months.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of dove into the bikes.
Okay.
I've always done that, but I never really hyper focused on the bikes and kind of, and it just happened organically where I realized I could kind of have my own specific style with the bikes. And I think that's what really kind of saved me during COVID was being able to create bicycles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since you can't go out and shoot pictures of stuff and people.
Yeah. And
whatnot.
It just, I don't know. There was so much heaviness going on, you know, and like, I didn't feel like going out and taking photos of flowers.
No.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't
damn
know.
You, flowers are still blooming and everything's dying.
Yeah. I know. Straight up.
Yeah. What's your lead time on a bike build?
Right now I have, let's see, building one for a good friend, Rachel, also through Treefort.
Nice.
Worked with her on the media team.
Okay.
And then I have one for a gal named Lucy in Arizona, actually. It's my first out-of-state build. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she hit me up because Velo Orange, a company, shared one of my builds.
Okay.
And she hit me up and she was like, hey, like, do you do out of state stuff? Like,
why not?
I want you to build my dream bike. Yeah. Here's a deposit. And I was like, let's go.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So at this point, I have two full builds. I'm probably a good 3 months out.
Okay.
And then I think Lucas and I have been talking about maybe starting like a really fun
repurposing
bike brand or something. Yeah.
Okay.
Because he just got some new shop space off of Orchard. And he's been working real hard. And there's enough space for like a little corner bike shop there. So we'll see what's up. Yeah.
Are you talking about where right there on Latah? He's got more space?
So he's got this new space on an orchard right across from Luciano's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like a really old machine shop that he's been completely restoring.
Okay.
Into his living quarters. And then there's going to be like four suites.
Creative space.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Rentable spaces.
Good. That's
I'm like,
nice. Okay.
I'm like, yo, I think
you guys are all
going to
start this crazy dynasty here.
Yeah.
You're going to take over Boise.
And like, I'm just so activated in the sense of building not only just bikes, but with working at BBP at the bike project, I can literally create something that like looks amazing, is so smooth, totally unique, and it's upcycled and repurposed. And so I think that in this new age of transportation and like all of the problems we're facing with like climate change and everything, I love the idea of taking something that's already neglected, just collecting dust somewhere, like an 80s or 90s mountain bike per se, and then turning it into a commuter.
Okay.
A really fun way to get around.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's really any brand per se out there that's doing like upcycled stuff or repurposed stuff.
Right.
So I've been talking with Lucas about what that could look like.
Maybe. Do you have a name for this?
Probably Lobo Bikes.
Lobo. Okay. Lobo I like bikes. That. I like that. Lobo.
Yeah. Because Lovera is kind of, it's the root for Lovera is Lobo.
Okay.
And I've always felt so attached to the wolf.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
it's gnarly.
I think it could look cool. Lobo Bikes. Yeah.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah. I think that's a great name. It's easy, too, and it's definitely a word that will stick with you.
Yeah.
So I did hit you up on DM when we were first chatting about, you know, getting together in your spare time, because it sounds like you have about as much spare time as I do.
Right.
Just like nil.
Right.
But we fit in stuff that is fun.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see about you. Since we're on the podcast, it'll be recorded where I'm asking you and putting you on the hook to do some kind of mixology class.
1000%
at the space.
Love it.
Okay. Would you do that?
Oh yeah. 100%.
That'd be so much fun. Yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah. And definitely, of course, like your rooted drinks that you like to do, and maybe something with one of the syrups. I have house-made syrup in my shop.
Sweet.
They're out of Nampa.
I'm sure
you've heard of them.
Yeah.
Maybe using one of their syrups, something creative with, they do have a new one, the Orgeat. Syrup.
Oh, like the sweet almond.
The Mai Tai. Yeah, the almond.
Ooh.
Bridget grabbed some
She
said her and Brandon love it.
Tiki.
So we can use something with that. Tiki,
into it.
Yes.
Yep.
But maybe a Peruvian spin on the tiki, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking probably like a silver rum or
Look at you, you already got
pisco,
it going.
And then I'm growing this plant called Wakatai.
Okay.
Which is a Andean marigold.
Ooh.
It's commonly referred to as like black mint or Peruvian mint.
That sounds good.
Yeah, because it has this super minty, limey flavor profile, but it's a marigold actually.
Wow.
And
I love using marigold
when I
bake sometimes too.
Same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. I finally was able to grow it from seed.
Wow.
And it's thriving right now. It's almost like 4 feet tall.
Jeez.
It's supposed to go up to 6.
Wow.
Looks like bamboo.
Like sunflowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like bamboo, but it has all these crazy leaves that shoot out, and it looks like pot, which is really
fun. Wow, that's kind of fun, too.
My roommate thought it was.
So he's out there, and you're like,
what are you
doing,
dude? You can smoke it, but I'm trying to use this for a drink, dude. Yeah.
You can try it out, sure.
So that ended up, that was my main inspiration for this first tasting menu at
Kin,
was growing this plant
and
featuring it on their drink menu.
Okay, well, good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to solidify a date with you.
Yeah, do it.
So that we can do that, because I think that's going to go over well, and that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, nothing gives me more joy than to, like, share Peruvian cuisine with people.
Oh, yeah, I dig it.
Peruvians cook with their heart,
yes.
And there's so many influences and backgrounds that you can explore there, and I just love sharing it with people.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's great. I am so happy that you said yes, that you wanted to get on here. I've been dying to get to know you better.
Nice.
For sure. I love, again, your pictures. I love everything about you, Peter.
Yeah.
Got some really good energy.
Thank you.
And I hope that we can hang out again sometime.
Appreciate the invite. To be honest, I've had many opportunities to do this, and it just felt right this time.
Oh, thank you.
So this was my first podcast experience. Well, happy to have had it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Me too. And
sweet.
Cheers on our... Mates. On our mate, So, hey, everyone, thanks so much for listening in. I enjoyed this one with Peter.
Yeah.
So, hey, and if you want to learn how to make some, like a tiki Peruvian drink, we'll look for the class when it pops up.
Tiki Pisco Sours.
Yeah.
Ooh. And then come see me at Kin. I'm there Thursday, Friday nights.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah,
the bar is open.
Kin is great.
Bar top's open, and we have bar snacks, we're calling it.
Oh.
But it's all local focused and sustainable, you know, it's part of our ethos. But nothing is over $14 on the food
side.
Oh, that's
good. That's good, too.
Yeah, and it's really fun. Share plates, and the menu is constantly changing.
Oh, good. All right. So hear that, everyone. Kin. That's where you find Peter. All right. Cheers.
Thanks so much.
Bye. Thanks. Hey, thanks everyone for tuning in. Hope you guys like what you heard. If you want to listen to more episodes, please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. To see how I'm doing my part in curating Boise, check out my Instagrams at SavoryN, that's the letter N, Sweet Inc., and at Salvage Sisters and Son. Tune in next week. Peace.